be part of the debate on the fate of the state. Make it count on the date. Make sure you got it straight. Get the latest update on matters of state from matters of state. Cause your state matters.
It sure does, and thank you, James Valentine. I'm Wendy Harmer.
And I'm Richard Glover.
And welcome to Matters of State, looking at the major issues that will determine the upcoming New South Wales state election. And this week, we're looking at cost of living pressures. We always hear how expensive it is to live in Sydney. Are people on the move, we wonder, Richard?
Yeah, well, today we'll be looking at the factors that hit your back pocket, whether you're in Sydney or elsewhere, from the cost of housing to power prices, medical bills, and to childcare. Is the state becoming more expensive place to live in? Well, here are some of the people of Wagga Wagga answering just that question.
Sydney is definitely the most expensive. We can't afford to buy a house in Sydney. We would have to rent a tiny apartment. And in Wagga, we can afford to rent a house with a backyard, which is really nice. Childcare seems to be a bit cheaper in Wagga than definitely in Sydney. It's definitely challenging.
Every time you go into the supermarkets, they're going up in price. They don't tell you, they put them up 3 or 5 cents each time, but over a week or a fortnight, adds up.
Vehicles, registration, shopping, everything.
Like, we're all going to see our power bills go through the roof because of the weather. Now the beef's going to go up because of the floods.
I don't know where to start with rent and everything going up. When it comes to registration for sport, that's another thing. University fees, I guess, that's another thing that's gone up in the rise, but I'm surviving. I'm getting there.
Yeah, you can hear people are under pressure. ABC state political reporter Sarah Gerrithy has been looking into this over the last couple of weeks. Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Wendy. Hello, Richard.
It's obvious that the parties know that people are feeling this, because when you look at the policies that have already come out, they're very dominated by little handouts here and there, aren't they?
They really are, and that's sort of something that seemed to twig with the government in the last year or so. You know, we heard for the first few years that they were in power, everything was about infrastructure, services, transport. And around the time of the last state budget, all of a sudden it was like a switch had flicked, and they suddenly realised that actually what was happening in Sydney was people were really noticing how expensive it was, and so they started to change their message. And the last state budget was full of announcements about these new measures they were offering voters. So things like, for example, the $100 rebates for your kids to do sport or art. Since then, announced $300 bundles of goods for new mums, you know, the sort of things that you might need when you're starting out life with a new baby. So they're very much aware that this is, you know, something that is resonating with voters, and they feel that this could be the way sort of in, I guess, to try and win mm-hmm. over those votes and grab their attention.
Well, yeah, well, it's an interesting one though, isn't it? Because you think, oh gosh, would I go to the trouble to apply for a one-off bonus?
There are a baffling array. There's one 2 days ago where you can get a now... See, my eyes focused on this in the newspaper, Wendy, for obvious reasons, but under the coalition you'll be able to get a seniors savings card for anyone over 60. You can still be working. It doesn't mean you get all the benefits of the seniors card, but you get at least some of them. So you've got that. You've got the rego thing.
Perhaps Labor is being a bit smarter about this by saying, we got to do this a different way. Free TAFE. Free public transport for children, fair refunds for late trains. I mean, the cash back on the M4, like, you don't have to go and apply for that specially, do you?
A lot of the things that the Labor Party is promising, that's right, they're sort of, I guess they're broader ideas, and they're sort of trying to frame it as a matter of priorities, making it fairer for people. It's sort of a different argument that they're making, but really it is about the same things,
which is,
you know, helping people financially. In Sydney, it's the rebate schemes that are most popular, those electricity rebate schemes. People are pretty tapped in to those, and the rego and bill relief measures are quite popular, I think, because those are things that have been around for a little while. It's actually in the regions the most popular thing has really been that active kids voucher. Apparently that's been extremely popular there.
Well, the idea you can get free money off the government, any government, is an intoxicating idea for me. As soon as I get that seniors card, I'm on the train from Sydney to Gosford, Gosford to Sydney, Sydney to Gosford, $2.50. I can make $100 just by staying on that train all day long.
Well, I shall hand you a list of every measure that you could possibly claim, Richard, and you can, you know, spend your retirement years.
I'll be flat out.
Oh, listen, we don't want to hear about, you know, privileged old men living in the city. Tell us about your Parramatta resident, Gillie Anderson, and her daughter, Kate, instead.
A lot of people that I've been speaking to sort of say, well, there's not much in it for me necessarily. Mm. You know, perhaps there's a bit too much focus on middle-income families, and there are other people who might be missing out. And one of the people I spoke to this week was Parramatta resident, Julie Anderson. She's a pensioner. She retired a few years ago. And essentially she moved in with her daughter, her adult daughter, who's a mental health support worker, because to pool their resources just made so much more sense. Sure. And they do have quite a modest lifestyle. They might go out for dinner once a week. They take holidays within Australia. But they certainly say that they couldn't really get by if they weren't doing it together. And when they look at what these sorts of cost of living measures that are being announced by both sides, they don't really necessarily see anything in it for them.
I think that we're left out of the equation. I think they're only interested really in the families with kids, and that's a big mistake because we vote.
What do you think would make a difference?
Rebates on electricity, I think.
Yeah.
Power bills are just terrible at the moment. Slashing public transport costs. I spend $13 a day on transport, public transport, and I think I probably wouldn't spend that much if I had petrol for a car, food.
I think food is just appalling. But I go over to Coles now and to buy a couple of things and make a cake. There's no change out of $40, $50. There's just, I don't know how some people can survive.
The people who are really in need.
That aren't as lucky as us.
And they vote too, but they're really a silent majority, you know.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, this is where economists will beg to differ, isn't it? They'll say, look, actually, inflation is very low. You know, some things like power prices obviously have been a great difficulty, but by and large, food prices are not growing. They will tell you, obviously, there's a, you know, flood effect or a drought effect now and then, but by and large, this is a myth.
It is. And I mean, the weird thing with this is that there's a real difference between what the statistics are telling you and what the people that you speak to every day are saying. Really, what it comes down to is wages are just now starting to sort of slip behind that thing. So it's only a little squeeze, but the problem is
the lack of wages growth more than food inflation.
Yeah, you spoke to someone who was perhaps worse off than Chili and Kate Anderson. Introduced to us David Boyd.
Now, he is somebody who was an executive in the banking world, and he essentially lost his job in the global financial crisis around the same time as his marriage broke down. He's now a single dad. So he says that when he looks at this, you know, he's spending 2/3 of his income, his Centrelink income, on rent. And when he looks at what's on offer, he really thinks that it's people like him who've been left behind because housing is so expensive. So the policies of both sides for him at the moment aren't really resonating.
I mean, I look upon her as Marie Antoinette, you know, let the little people eat cake. Because she's all about, you know, the elites and stadiums and new corporate boxes and caviar and champagne. But in terms of people doing it tough, you know, she's in another world. My life's changed an incredible amount. I was at the top of the tree. I was wining and dining, had the beautiful house on the beach, had, you know, $500,000 in the bank. And now I'm at the opposite end of the scale. I've lost everything. Each fortnight, I get $1,050. And out of that $1,050, I pay $760 in rent. And then $200 of that goes on food. And then I've got the rest to meet phone, internet and electricity. I'm concerned to be able to feed my daughter. And I live for her. If I didn't have her, I don't know how I would have kept going.
Wow, that is a real story, isn't it?
I think it is. And I think it shows, you know, he's somebody who's seen the good life and obviously has ended up where he has. And really for somebody like him, you know, I've been speaking as well to the Council of Social Services, and they're just saying people like that have to make decisions about what their priorities are. Do they spend their money on medication? Do they pay their electricity bill or risk it being cut off? It's a matter of the money can't go that far and spread across all of those things.
I guess though, a lot of what you're talking about here, Sarah, we might say, well, is it a state responsibility or is this a federal responsibility? Do people really, though, make the distinction?
Well, I think a lot of people do sort of think that there are both governments, you know, could help them in some way. Obviously, with somebody like David Boyd, you know, the issue of how much money people in those situations receive. And he was telling me, for example, that to seek a job with Centrelink, he has to have the internet, he has to have a mobile phone. But those are obviously both costly things.
Oh, yeah,
and so at the moment, for his phone can only receive incoming calls. He can't actually make any because he's been unable to pay the bill. And so certainly, absolutely, federal governments have a role to play. He says that he looks at both sides and sort of is pretty cynical and thinks, well, they'll never deliver.
Well, it's not coming down the track anytime soon, I guess.
You're listening to Matters of State. Yeah, we have been talking about issues of the cost of living, and we put a post on the ABC Sydney Facebook page, asked people what they did to be able to afford to live in Sydney, and we had a huge response. You know what one of the most common answers was? Move out of the place. Let's bring in the Chief of Staff at ABC Western Plains, Nick Lowther. He's in Dubbo, and he's had his fair share of tree and sea changes. Nick, welcome to Matters of State.
Hi, everyone.
Howdy.
Yeah, tell us about Dubbo, in particular people who have left Sydney to come and live with you guys just because Sydney is becoming impossible.
It's the great story. And no matter where you are, inland, coastal, people figuring out how they can take their lives to a country area, because people say, oh, I'd love to move, but how do I move my life? How do I take my children to those schools? What are those schools like? Am I going to be able to afford to buy a house, which we have many people who want to buy a house in Sydney. They've got the deposit ready, can't do it. They come to Dubbo, bang, you've got a house within the matter of months. Average house price in Dubbo sits between $390 to $420 at the moment.
Oh, stop it, Nick. Come on, stop it.
Oh, is that the garage, you mean, or is it the whole house?
Well, I had to slum it and have a four-bedroom for $350
But I hate some people.
It is. It's a housing market that people out here, though, in the reverse, if you have the great move, it pushes the house prices up. So for someone who's grown up in Narromine, they've moved to Dubbo, they've picked up a decent job, they're on maybe $50,000, $60,000 a year, and they begin to look at what they want to buy for a house. The reach is moving for them too. So 10 years ago, the median house price in Dubbo was well below $350,000. Now it's beginning to increase up because there is that demand. And of course, with it comes investors, people who identify that there is a growing population. So the big change when you talk about infrastructure change for New South Wales is that the National Party have put a lot of money into regional infrastructure, regional jobs, and there has been an explosion of state jobs in a number of areas. For instance, Dubbo has the largest amount of its employees are public sector employees. The health industry itself employs thousands of people inside Dubbo, and that, as a result, has driven up the cost of living here. We joke about commutes, but people now talk about living outside of Dubbo because they want that country lifestyle back again, because the urban sprawl is now on for areas like Dubbo or Orange or Tamworth or Wagga. So people say, well, I might choose to live in a bit more of a further area. So petrol, of course, comes into play too.
Do you think that, you know, we've talked about cost of living pressures and people feeling it in Sydney, whatever the statisticians say. Do you think despite those house prices in Dubbo that people are also there feeling cost of living pressures?
Horrendously. Social housing is the big problem for a number of areas because we still have that cycle of socioeconomic issues. For people that are earning below $50,000, $40,000, that is a very tough wage to live on. We've got a social housing shortage in every country town in Australia, not enough social housing. Country towns always have a big backlash against social housing because they worry about a change in the status of their suburbs. So councils have to fight to get social housing inside estates. It is this continuous fight, and the backlog and shortfall means we've got people that are falling out of the system, that are going homeless, that are crippling themselves on rent that they can't afford. And you mentioned before, Wendy, about car registration. Mm-hmm. That's the big one too. Public transport's not a world we live in most areas of 40,000, 50,000 people. There are some buses that get around, but not regularly. There's not a regular train service. You might go once or twice a day to Sydney or another area. So you are paying petrol all the time. You are not using a bus. For areas in inland New South Wales, and not just Dubbo, I won't be the only one complaining, we've just gone through a gigantic heat wave. I'll probably have to donate a kidney for my next power bill. It'll be humongous. And I think to myself, well, okay, I'm on an all right wicket. I'm not, you know, buying houses left, right and centre, but I'll probably have enough to pay the power bill. But my neighbour paid the exact same amount of electricity as me, and I don't know how he or she's going to go with their paying their bill. So,
Nick, I wanted to ask you finally, you say that people are feeling the cost of living pressures in the country. Who do they blame for that? Is this what Bridget Glanville was talking about last week, where they've really got the baseball bats out for all the parties and want to go independent? Is that what it means?
It means that they're trying to say they want their voice heard, because cost of living, sometimes it's not just about how much you're paying, it's how long you're waiting. You wait a long time to get a doctor here, so it can take up to a week or two. Sometimes I spoke to someone in Mudgee a couple of weeks ago. It took 2 weeks, 3 weeks to get into a doctor.
Wow.
And they joke about the idea that they, you know, help the doctor by getting well when they arrive. you know, these are the things that people want to swing the baseball bat at. And of course, it doesn't matter who the government is. You talk to anyone in regional New South Wales about cost of living, car registration, and the frustration of paying a green slip, particularly for people around Moama or Albury, who over the river, Victorians aren't paying for a green slip, but they are. And they kind of scratch their head going, it's just over the river. Why don't they have a green slip, but we have a green slip? But on the flip side of that, Sarah mentioned the, and you all mentioned the active kids vouchers, the creative vouchers. I think that's been a gigantic winner for the government because sport is community. Sport is all about communities. Here we have, I'll just take Dubbo for instance, we have 2,500 people playing soccer in Dubbo. 1,200 of those are children. And yeah, you've got $100 off your kids, $200 fees.
And Sarah, you've been talking to some academics about exactly how we are spending our money.
Yeah, that's right. And it's sort of the thing that we were just talking about, that, you know, actually what these figures show is that really the reason that people are starting to feel the pinch is because wages have started to stagnate. And then in the last 12 months or so, they've just gone backwards. And so Ben Phillips from the Australian National University, I got him to crunch a few numbers for us. And this is sort of what he found.
Certainly it is the case that electricity prices have increased. They've perhaps doubled over the last 10 years in Sydney, and they have right around the country as well. We are using a little bit less electricity, but the main areas we find that really are the real pinch points of cost of living, if you will, is things like hospital and medical costs and health insurance. These are the areas where the growth has been the greatest. We're also spending a lot more money, though, on some things that perhaps are more luxury items. So this includes, say, restaurant meals and, say, international travel. This is where we're actually spending a lot more money than what we used to, and certainly a lot more than what we spend on electricity. Petrol prices are actually lower than what they were 10 years ago. They're not always the standard items that we look at, say, electricity and petrol, where the real cost of living pressures are. It's often in other areas that are perhaps not as well reported.
So I think the other thing to note in that is the actual slide has only been so slight. In the past 12 months, I think living standards, which is how they calculate it, have dropped back, but only by 1/3%. So it doesn't take much before people start to really feel it.
But look, there's something else going on, that means, isn't there? I mean, general discontent, perhaps.
It's human nature to focus your mind on things that are getting worse. Steven Pinker writes about this in his new book. Probably goes back into our deep evolutionary history. The tribe that saw the saber-toothed tiger coming out and focused on it was the tribe that was more likely to survive. So it is amazing. I mean, sometimes you go into to Hardware Hill to buy something like an electric drill, and I am staggered by how cheap it is.
Yeah,
I think this is ridiculous. You shouldn't be able to buy an electric drill for $40 or something.
That's right. Well, and kids' T-shirts for $2-3.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, it's certainly very hard to sustain the idea that the whole basket of goods that's measured by the CPI is going up hugely. It's not.
But if you get back to the basic of what it costs to keep a roof over your head, which most people would say was a pretty basic human need, if you are paying so much of your money just to keep the rain off.
Okay, I don't want to go all avocado toast on you, Wendy Hummer.
Yeah, but
there are a lot of people, and this goes for Dubbo too, and Tamworth and Armidale and Wagga and Sydney. There's a lot of people having a lot of coffees in a lot of cafes Australia, in a way that in the 70s and the 80s they just
and
didn't
look
do.
At those figures there on going on holidays overseas.
Absolutely, I mean that's the thing. One of the biggest things have gone up: overseas holiday, restaurant meals, and that's the other thing. Our lifestyles have changed. So for decades, we've seen, you know, this great improvement, leaps and bounds in living standards. We've gotten used to that, and so everybody, you know, has different expectations now.
Well, air conditioning is one of them. I mean, there's Nick Lowther lying half naked underneath his swampy.
And consumption is a big part of that discussion that we look at. I just can't get that vision out myself. It horrifies me. But we look at our houses now and the amount of electrical appliances. Like when I grew up, we had one TV, we had a radio. And now we have a house that has three televisions. We do have that air conditioning going most of the day. Maybe we do need my Auntie Jan on us all the time, who says, "You're burning money.
But you know, discontent, as Richard says, is a very fertile ground to plow, isn't it? And so we shall see. Thanks to Sarah Gerethy, a state political reporter with ABC News, and to Nick Lowther, the Chief of Staff at ABC Western Plains, for joining us on this edition edition of Matters of State.
We will see you next week. Join us next time as we look at the issue of transport, road congestion, tolls and public transport. What are the major parties offering, and will we really get a high-speed rail system to regional centres?
Ho, ho, ho.
Shut up, you. That's next week on Matters of State. See you then. By the way, you can catch Bridget Glanville's new election TV show on the ABC News Channel on Friday night. See you, Wendy.
See you later, Richard.
Be part of the debate on the fate of the state. Make it count on the date. Make sure you got it straight. Get the latest update on Matters of State from Matters of State. 'Cause your state matters.